Have you ever watched an airplane program that everybody assumed was dead just refused to lie down? That's the story today. I'm Tower, and this is ATs here on Radio Hangar. Let's get into it. The headline straight off the wire from AviWeb this week. The first production example of the Russian Yakovlev MC-21, the 310 variant, has made its first flight. That moves Russia's domestically sourced narrowbody one step closer to certification. Now, if you're a working pilot in the States or Western Europe, your first honest reaction might be, so what? This isn't an airplane you're gonna fly, and it's not one you're gonna ride in the back of anytime soon. Fair enough, but stay with me. Because the headline doesn't tell the whole story, and this one is more interesting than a foreign type certificate usually is. This airplane tells you something about how the entire narrowbody world is being reshaped right now, and that part affects everybody who flies. Before we go further, a quick word from the people helping keep this segment on the air. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's talk about what actually flew. Here's what you need to know. The MC-21 is Russia's answer to the two airplanes that own the single aisle market on this side of the world. Think Boeing 737 and the Airbus A320 family. Same basic mission. 150 to 212 seats, short to medium haul. The bread and butter airplane that flies the routes most airline passengers actually take. The program isn't new. Yakovlev, which most of you will remember better under the name Irkut before a recent corporate reshuffle inside Russia's United Aircraft Corporation, first flew the MC-21 back in 2017. That original airplane had two things going for it that made Western engineers sit up first. The engine. It was designed to fly behind the Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan, the same family of engine you'll find hanging off an A320neo. Good engine, efficient, proven. Second, and this is the part the airplane was genuinely known for, the wing. The MC-21 was built with a composite wing made using a technique called out-of-autoclave infusion. In plain language, they didn't bake the wing in a giant pressurized oven the way most large composite structures are made. They used a resin infusion process that, in theory, lets you build a big composite wing faster and cheaper. That wing let the designers make it thinner and higher in aspect ratio than a metal wing of the same weight. Longer, more slender, more efficient. On paper, the MC-21 had a wider cabin than the 737 and a wing that could have made it a real competitor. That was the promise in 2017. Then the world changed. After 2022, the sanctions came down, and they came down hard on exactly the parts of that airplane that made it competitive. The Pratt & Whitney engines gone the Western composite materials that fed that fancy wing. Cut off American and European avionics, systems, components, all the pieces that quietly make up a huge fraction of any modern airliner. Off the table. And this is where a lot of people wrote the program's obituary. Because here's a truth about modern airliners that we don't say out loud often enough. There is no such thing as a national airplane anymore. Not really. A Boeing is full of parts from Japan, from Italy, from all over the world. An Airbus is assembled from pieces built across a dozen countries. The global supply chain isn't a convenience. It's the foundation. Pull enough pieces out, and the airplane simply cannot be built. So Russia made a decision. They would rebuild the airplane using only what they could produce. Domestically. Import substitution, they call it, and the airplane that came out the other end of that process is the variant that just flew in production form, the MC-21 310. The 310 designation is the TEL. That number marks the version with the Russian engine. The Aviadvigatel PD-14. This is a homegrown turbofan developed in Perm, and it is arguably the single most important piece of the whole effort, because an airframe without an engine is a very expensive glider. Russia not being able to buy the Pratt could have ended the program right there. The PD-14 is the answer to that. It's the reason this airplane exists at all in its current form. Now, the honest engineering assessment, and I'm going to flag this as my read of the reporting, not gospel. When you swap out Western engines, Western systems, and some of those Western composite materials for domestic substitutes developed under enormous time pressure, you generally pay for it. You pay in weight, you pay in fuel burn, you pay in range, and in how many seats you can carry how far. Russian officials have publicly acknowledged the substituted airplane is heavier than the original design and gives up some performance. That's not a rumor, that's coming from inside the program. So the airplane that just flew is real, and it is a genuine engineering achievement given the constraints, but it is almost certainly not the airplane that was going to challenge Airbus and Boeing on efficiency back in 2017. It's a different, heavier, more compromised machine built to a single overriding requirement, that it can be built at all without a single Western part. This affects you if you care about where the airline industry is heading over the next 20 years. So let me connect the dots. For decades, the big single-aisle market has been a two-horse race, Boeing and Airbus. That duopoly shapes everything downstream. It shapes airline fleet decisions. It shapes pilot hiring because the type ratings that matter, the 737 and the A320, are the ones airlines train and pay for. It shapes the delivery backlog, and that backlog is currently measured in years. If you've been trying to figure out why your regional or your major can't get airplanes fast enough, part of the answer is that only two companies on Earth build them at scale, and both are sold out. Now look at what's happening around the edges of that duopoly. China has the COMAC C919, flying in domestic service and slowly building its case. Russia has the MC-21 grinding towards certification on entirely domestic parts. Neither of these airplanes is going to show up on a Western Airlines ramp anytime soon. That's not the point. The point is that the two-company grip on the single-aisle airplane, the tightest bottleneck in all of commercial aviation, is being challenged on multiple fronts at once by countries that have decided they don't want to depend on Seattle or Toulouse for the airplanes that move their own populations. That's a structural shift, and structural shifts are the ones that eventually reach down to the flight deck. Here's the second thing this story tells you, and it's the one I find most instructive as a pilot. It's about certification, and about what that word actually means. The reporting says, this flight moves the airplane closer to certification. I want to be careful and precise about what that does and does not mean. Because certification is one of those words that gets thrown around loosely. When Russia certifies the MC-21, that will be a certification granted by the Russian Aviation Authority, Rosaviatsiya, under Russian rules, for operation inside Russian airspace and the airspace of countries that choose to accept that certificate. It is not, and in the current climate, almost certainly will not be, a validation from the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, or from the European Union Aviation Safety Agency. Why does that distinction matter to you, sitting in a Cessna 172 or a King Air, or the left seat of an airliner? Because it's a reminder that airworthiness is not a physical property of an airplane. It's a legal and institutional judgment. An airplane is airworthy in the eyes of a specific authority, under a specific set of rules, for a specific kind of operation. We forget this in general aviation because in our world, the FAA is simply the air we breathe. The type certificate, the airworthiness certificate in the door pocket, the annual inspection, the fact that your airplane's data plate ties it to an approved type design. All of that is one authority's system, and it only means something because we all agree it does. The MC-21 is a live demonstration of what happens when that agreement breaks down along national lines. You end up with an airplane that is fully certified in one system and completely unrecognized in another. Same aluminum, same composites, same laws of physics holding it in the air. Totally different legal status depending on whose airspace you're in. Keep that in the back of your mind the next time you fly something on an experimental certificate, or ferry an airplane across a border, or wonder why a modification that's perfectly legal in one country requires a whole approval process in another. Airworthiness is a jurisdiction, not just a condition of the metal. Let me bring it to the third point, and this one's shorter, but I think it's the most human part of the story. There are engineers in Perm and in Irkutsk and in the design bureaus who have spent the last several years doing something genuinely hard. Re-engineering a modern airliner from the inside out, swapping foundational systems mid-program, under sanctions, under deadline pressure, under political scrutiny. Set aside every question of geopolitics for 1 second and just look at the engineering problem. Designing a clean sheet turbofan and getting it to fly on a production airframe is the work of a career. Doing it as a forced substitution on a compressed timeline is a genuinely serious piece of work. I say that not to praise a program or a country, I say it because we as pilots should be honest about respecting hard engineering wherever it shows up, even when it's wrapped in circumstances we might not like. The airplane flew, that's not nothing. Real people made real decisions about spar caps and fuel systems and control laws to make it fly. That deserves a clear-eyed look rather than a reflexive dismissal. Now, will it succeed? That's the open question. And here I'm flagging opinion, not fact. The challenges from here are steep. Production rate is the killer for every new airliner program, not the first flight. Anybody can fly one airplane, building them by the dozen and then the hundred, with a domestic supply chain that's never had to feed a program at that scale, is the real mountain. The heavier, less efficient substituted airplane will cost more to operate than the original design would have. and the addressable market, at least for now, is largely limited to operators who can't or won't buy Western. That's a smaller pond, but smaller isn't zero. And a country that has decided it will build its own narrow body, regardless of the economics, is not making a purely commercial decision. It's making a strategic one. Those tend to get funded long past the point where a private company would have walked away. So here's where I'd leave it. The first production, MC-21-310, flying this week is not a story about an airplane you'll ever fly. It's a story about the plumbing underneath all of commercial aviation. The supply chains. The certification systems. The quiet two-company grip on the most important airplane category in the world. All of it is under more pressure and more change than it has been in a generation. And the pieces that get rearranged at that level eventually settle down onto ramps and flight decks everywhere, including ours. Watch the production numbers over the next couple of years. Not the first flights, the delivery counts. That's the number that will tell you whether this is a real airplane program or a very expensive point being made. Deliveries are where airliner dreams go to be tested. That's the read for today. My thanks to AVWeb for the reporting that anchored this one. You can find us anytime at RadioHangar.com. I'm Tower. Keep your eyes outside, and I'll see you on the next ATIS.